Welcome back to the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. This is podcast 403, being joined momentarily by Jason Lewis. Jason and I, of course, worked together for many years in talk radio, and we've done some podcasts since, and Jason is doing podcasts, and I'm going to post some links to his podcast and his audiobook as well. He's going to be sending those to me a little bit later on, but he's going to show up here at the Mobile Podcast Command Unit, parked in a local watering hole, parking lot over here in Woodbury. So Jason will be here shortly. And this time of the year, it's odd because we just finished all the rain, and now it feels like October out here. And you have all these sort of fall, late summer events like Sturgis and Wee Fest, and of course in Minnesota, the State Fair. And these events let us know that the close of summer is coming fast and that we're about to enter the mini ice age that we call winter in the upper Midwest. And the reason I'm mentioning this is the last time I talked to Greg Ryan from Ryan Plumbing and Heating, he said, you should get people to remember to check their heating system, to have us come out and check the heating systems, and here's why. Today, it's all about integrating smart tech with your heating systems to make them more efficient. Now, if you haven't had your heating system upgraded in the last 5 years, Ryan can upgrade you and save you a lot of money during the mini ice age that we call winter in the upper Midwest. Winter is coming, as they say on the show, and it's a good time to check your heating. A, if you do upgrade, you're going to save a lot of money. B, they might be able to help you save money anyway, because there's things that they can do. So call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul and ask him about the heat check. If you're in St. Paul, you can call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, call 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too, places like Woodbury and Mendota and White Bear and Plymouth and St. Louis Park. Their trucks go all over the market. You've probably seen them around. Remember, for four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul. So if you're in St. Paul, you want to have your heating checked, see if they can help you with upgrades, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul.
Hey, you just rolled up. The guy's mowing the lawn over there, so we got a... What's going on?
What the heck? I'm feeling kind of faint. I didn't know I'd end up in the back of an ambulance already. My goodness gracious, what an outfit you got here.
We'll take you to the hospital of your choice, which will mean the end of your life, probably.
Well, usually when I do an interview with Bob Davis, I end up feeling kind of sick. So, this is perfect. This is really cool. This is really neat. A podcast on the road in the back of an ambulance. But you got the energy, the current, the AC/DC, you got everything you need in here. Plus, almost looks like it's built-in soundproof when you got it.
Yeah, it's a little... I've got these giant moving blankets that I could put up, which will really deaden
really
the sound.
Yeah.
But then you wouldn't be able to see me, so...
All right, okay, put them up. That's good. I like that.
That'll save you from...
This is cool.
So it's funny, because I kind of, being nocturnal, I kind of got up, had my coffee, and just came over here, and you said, did you know what happened in the market today? And I was like, what? What?
You and Elvis. You get on that nighttime kick, and it just feeds itself. So I sleep in one day until 11 o'clock. And you sleep until 11,
and
so you say,
good.
I can stay up till 12 tonight. So you stay up till 12. The next day you sleep in at 12 till 12. I can stay up till 1. And pretty soon you're getting up at 4 o'clock and going to bed at 4 in the morning.
It's wonderful.
That's a weird... I've got to fight myself from not falling into that. After doing radio in the evening for
That's
20
right.
years,
yeah.
You get into that. But I don't like it. I have to fight not falling into that trap. But some people, you and Elvis, right?
If it's good enough for Elvis, it's good enough for me.
Precisely. So, anyway, yeah, the market tanked today.
Well, do we attribute that to what? China or to the Federal Reserve?
The Fed
to
is killing the market, but it's killing the market by not raising rates. As long as the specter of a rate hike is out there, everybody's running for the hills. Once they raise the rate, and it's not the end of the world, and the market thinks then, stock and bond, okay, they've raised the rate, they're going to back off for a while. You're going to see a shoot back up. But the bottom line is, here's what the Fed's thinking, and they won't say this because they're all, Obama files. But here's what they're thinking. They're thinking, well, we'd like to raise the rates. We can't keep doing this forever. We're running out of tools. We're creating another bubble in the market and in housing again. So we'd like to raise the rates. But this Obama economy stinks. It's so fragile that if we raise the rates, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket. So this way, just the market's going to hell in a handbasket. Aren't we lucky?
Well, and since we hate rich people, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Who cares, good thing. Right? Okay, and the bankers are happy, so that's all that matters to this administration. That's one thing that just drives me nuts about the left, is this whole nonsense about corporate welfare and who's the friend of the rich. Now, let me see. Who's bailing out the GE wind turbines? Who's bailing out Solyndra, A123, all these failed energy companies? Who bailed out General Motors
Elon
and the
Musk.
UAW? Who bailed out Wall Street? Yeah. We've bailed out Citigroup 5 times, Goldman Sachs, you name it, anybody and everybody. What's the Democratic Party that's bailing out? The Democratic Party is the party of corporate welfare.
But wasn't Bush the guy that pushed the bailout?
Well, so is he. But Bush, free market
he
types.
Panicked.
Let's not talk about the Republicans.
He said, I'm off of the free market, but.
Until you have to save it, right? That was a great line. I'm all for the free market, and that's why I'm intervening to save it. Which is, of course, the antithesis of a free market.
We have to burn the village to save it,
basically. That's right. And, of course,
he
got spooked.
The opposite of that.
He got spooked by Hank Paulson, of course, the Wall Street guy.
Yeah.
But, look, if you think the Republicans are going to save you, they're just big government conservatives anymore. They love their big farm programs. They love their military-industrial complex. And when the crisis hits, as you point out, they'll go to the bailout.
Right.
I'm talking about the notion that, the right-wingers and the people that believe in private property and free markets, the Rand Pauls and the Jason Lew, why, they're the favorite of the 1%. The people who are really getting rich off the Fed and this policy are the bankers and the creditors.
Yeah.
They're loaning money out hand over fist.
The people close to the money printing. Actually, I think they're reinvesting.
The people who get the money first.
Yeah.
Because the way we print money in America is through credit expansion.
Exactly.
And so when the banks get a credit expansion, they have to loan more loans. And so when they float more debt, they earn more interest until the bubble
bursts. Then how come the small business guy can't get a loan?
Yeah, isn't that ironic?
Isn't that?
But the Fed, the Fed in this credit expansion, they give the Wall Street and the bankers and the money market institutions a lot more money. But then they turn around and buy treasury bills because they're ultra safe. So they're getting money at zero in the federal overnight rate,
right.
Federal funds rate. So they buy a T-bill at 0.8%. When you talk about $1 billion, good enough for the bottom line. And that's the irony of it. If the rates were normal and the normal World War II, post-World War II 10-year treasury was 5.7%, that's the average. We haven't even been close to 3 for forever. If the rates were normal, you wouldn't have loans going out willy-nilly. You would only be lending money to, A, the people who have the highest return. You couldn't afford to make bad loans because, at 3%, 4%, 5% money, you better be loaning to people who are going to give you 6% so they can service the debt, right? But if the money's zero, you can just turn around and buy T-bills.
Right. Or reinvest it in the market.
Or run the bubble in the market.
Right.
Which is putting people out of the marketplace because the only people getting rich there are the institutional investors.
So, but yet at the same time, when you tour the country and you go out and you talk to people, it feels like the people are very resilient and inventive. It doesn't feel like we've got this imminent crisis in front of us.
Except for two words. Donald Trump.
Let's talk about Donald Trump.
There is a reason why this guy's resonating. He's no more conservative than Bernie Sanders. Well, okay, maybe anybody's more conservative than Bernie Sanders. But Donald Trump, if you look at his record, is just a guy that will use government to his own advantage. He's on both sides of every issue, has been. However, to his credit, he is resonating with that Nixonian silent majority that says, oh no, Bob, there is something wrong. And I want someone
to fix it right now.
I don't care how kooky he is.
I want someone to fix it right now. I want a man on a horse to ride in and fix it right now.
And say the things that nobody else will say. You know, when Megyn Kelly, who did her best impersonation of Helen Thomas the other night, when she gets up there and acts like a liberal and tries to bring Trump down, and he says, well, it's true I call people fat and a slob, but only Rosie O'Donnell. You know, Megyn, we're tired of this politically correct feminist, you can't say this, you can't. We call men fat slobs. Why shouldn't we be able to call women fat slobs? You want to play lumberjack, you got to hold it up, you're into the log. You know, they want it all, but they, oh, no, you that's insensitive. So Trump says, no, I don't care what you think. And people say, you're damn right. About time somebody said that. And, of course, the immigration issue, he's saying the only thing that all the Republicans are willing not to say, and that is, oh, we do have a border problem.
Well, he's saying a lot more than that. My favorite thing about his plan is he wants to have the government intervene and tell H-1B visa holders, say what the companies are going to pay H-1B visa holders. So here, again, it's another big government solution to the quote-unquote problem. And sending these people home, which is, you know, a lot of people
well,
want.
Well, except he's appealing
that's going to turn into a huge problem.
Well, except I will say this. He's not only tapping into the guy that lost his landscaping business because somebody else is hiring illegals for $5 an hour. He's appealing to that sort of blue-collar worker, if you will, or blue-collar businessman. But when it comes to the high-tech visas and it comes to the guest worker program, there are a hell of a lot of upset engineers in Silicon Valley and across this country who have been replaced either overseas or right here at home with much cheaper foreign labor. And Trump is tapping into that discontent, too.
Well, I know, but, I mean, the solution to that is to have the government tell companies what they're going to pay H-1B visa employees.
Well, what he's really saying, what he's trying to do is put roadblocks in the way of people hiring cheap engineers. And
why not hire cheap engineers?
Look.
Why pay an engineer for $200,000 a year when you can get one for $60,000?
Why not hire...
Why should they be grandfathered?
True, but why not pay cheap landscapers?
Why not?
Well, then you got open borders.
Well, you know...
I mean, you're competing with slave labor.
Really?
You don't think these people coming across the border are more than happy to work for $3 an hour?
I think part of the problem with the minimum wage is it creates this idea that you're supposed to get $15 or $10 an hour, and I think that labor is a price. I think it's a price, and if people need to work for $3 an hour, then maybe that's what they need to work for. You know, don't be a landscaper. Figure out something else that you can do to bring to the market that's worth more money. When you start going around saying what we're going to pay people, and I'm not for having the open borders. I don't believe in that. But I think the problem is the people who aren't illegal immigrants are getting paid so much money. Businesses and people are like, well, if I can get these guys to do this for $3 an hour,
you paid so much money, except their one bedroom bungalow now costs $300,000 thanks to Federal Reserve easy money.
Mm-hmm.
Stock market is out of reach. Mm-hmm. The 401k is tanked. They can't make it. This is the middle class angst, right or wrong, that Trump is tapping into, and it's real. And it's real there. I mean, I tend to sympathize with what you're saying on high-skilled immigration. Steve Jobs would be spinning in his grave listening to Donald Trump, no question about it. But I'm just telling you that that's an issue out there. And as Milton Friedman, who believed in not only the free trade of labor and capital across borders, he was a purist. You find the highest return on your capital, and you find the cheapest labor. Towards the end of his life, he and Rose both said, you cannot combine open borders with the welfare state.
Well, that's true. I totally agree with that.
And these businesses would not be able to pay people the kind of money they're paying them without the welfare state. If these guys coming over and weren't getting free medical care, weren't getting Section 8 vouchers, weren't getting all of the rest, then some business is going to have to pay them $10, $12, $13 an hour. They can't make it. And so what you've got is the government policy teaming up against the guy that used to have the landscaping job and his business.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Somebody, the business is one thing. A businessman told me recently, he said, it's getting to the point where we couldn't afford to get machines to do what these employees do. It's getting to the point now where it's actually affordable for us to start looking at autonomous machines, robots, etc., to do the things that we actually pay people to do. Where we're actually making the calculation that okay, we're gonna borrow this much money to. By the way,
there's a lawnmower right behind us here.
I pull up and there's a giant, John Deere tractor mowing this lawn over here. But anyway. We now can afford to buy machines and amortize the cost out 20 years because employees are too expensive. So it's going to be machines or it's going to be a cheaper labor force. And my thing is, people keep saying, well, I deserve to get paid this much. And I hear this all the time. I hear it from Republicans. I hear it from Democrats, mm-hmm. especially. People deserve this level of wage. And that's just not going to work. That thinking is not going to work. And we should not have open borders. I mean, we certainly should have free trade across borders. But having open borders and just letting anybody come in willy-nilly is not a good idea.
When you've got a global labor market, you're going to have downward pressure on labor rates because you've got basically slave labor in China where they limit how much people can make. So they're willing to work for a dollar a day. Does the American labor force want to compete with that? Can it compete with that? Especially if the market is flooded. That's what Trump is saying, is look, we can't compete with that, nor should we even try. It's sort of the old America First argument.
How did that work out?
Well, look, some would say that free trade hasn't worked out too well either. If you take a look at the median income today, and you take a look at where all these people, 93 million Americans, don't have work, you've got the labor force participation rate at an all-time low since 1977.
You know that's not because of free trade, though. You know that it's because the economy is not growing fast enough, and it's not because of free trade that those people are out of work. I mean, how many times have you heard, they sent all our jobs to China in a big box. We mailed all the jobs to China, but that's not what happened. It's a combination of higher cost for labor, automation, and, you know, using machines to do things that we couldn't have it. You know, 50 years ago, you couldn't machine build a car. Today, you can.
If you take the town of Wilmer, and overnight, you transplant 100,000 Guatemalans who are willing to work for a dollar a day, is that going to have a dislocation in that market for the people who are working there right now?
Yeah.
And more than that, you have the ability to subsidize that low-skilled labor with a welfare state. You have the government putting people out of work. Now, in a purest sense, I couldn't agree with you more. There's no more reason to block trade with Europe or Asia than there is to block trade with Mississippi, which has the lowest labor rates in the country. I agree with you. However, when you have you are not engaged in free trade, the operative word being free, when you're trading with China. China's not free. So there is a disconnect there. All I'm saying is that's what's Trump tapping into, and it's real.
So are you a Trump guy?
No. I mean, I don't trust how he would govern. Right. I have no idea where he stands on anything. I just think it's a hoot to watch this phenomenon, because what the and it's Republicans, ironically, are saying is anybody but the establishment. Anybody but Lindsey Graham, but Mike Huckabee, who will have us in World War III in about 2 minutes.
Well, Democrats are doing the same thing with Bernie Sanders. They're also saying anything but the establishment, and it seems to me like everybody wants a rhetorical solution to these problems, which are kind of complex. I mean, we've just talked briefly about the immigration thing, and when you actually get into the wrinkles of it, it gets pretty complex, even though maybe the solution is simple, just close the borders. But then that becomes this complex problem, and it's tied into welfare state.
You've got to
cut off the benefits.
You're right. You wouldn't need a wall if you ended the welfare state.
Right.
But as long as we're insistent upon having a welfare state, you need a wall.
Well, don't we agree that that's really the problem? It's the welfare state issue.
Yes.
And you start trying to reduce that and address that problem, it's complicated. And it isn't,
why isn't we in a great post-World War II recovery? We had the booming 60s. Up until 1965, we had legal immigration quotas on every country. That is, America said, we're only going to take legally, because it wasn't...
I don't have a problem with that.
But if it's all good, if the free trade of labor and capital across borders is good, and the government in your libertarian utopia shouldn't interfere, why did we ever have immigration quotas?
Well, there probably were other reasons besides just pure, we want to make sure we don't add too much to the labor force. Like, we don't want a bunch of people here that we don't particularly want here. That's one thing. We had the flood of the Irish. They came here, and a lot of people didn't like that. I mean, there's a certain nativist approach to some of those immigration quotas.
The reason we have the quotas, in my view anyway, is the same reason we have national defense, which is the antithesis of a free market. If we really believed in a pure freedom, ideologically pristine, you wouldn't need defense, because that's a government intervention. That's dislocating the market. And at these levels today, it really is dislocating the market. But the reason we do that, intervene to some degree, is the same reason we have courts and a police force. We have government to make certain that the country remains free. And the immigration quota, the theory behind it was that if you transplant 100,000 people from Latvia to some small town in Missouri, you're going to lose the culture of that town.
Yeah, but I mean, look, 100,000 people are not going to get transplanted to Latvia. I mean, from Latvia or Mexico to
town. 12 million from Mexico and Guatemala and Central America.
Well, 12 million across the whole country. And again, I'm not speaking in support of illegal immigration.
Well, how much do you think illegal immigration costs in the average state?
I don't know.
Corrections, education, police.
I don't think you can put a price on it.
$112 billion, according to the Center for Immigration Studies.
Okay.
And the federal government doesn't pick up any of that. So here you have these state and local communities being saddled with educating these people because of the Plyler decision back in 82 that says illegal immigrants must have a free education. You've got a situation where they're coming across for the anchor baby phenomenon. Therefore, they're citizens and get welfare. They're coming across to have their babies delivered under free medical care because a nonprofit hospital cannot turn anybody away. You have that, and you've got these massive costs on local communities that they can't keep up with, not to mention the cost of incarceration. Why is that not something that is a government policy? Why is that the right one?
But I mean, do you understand that that is not a simple solution politically? That when you start talking about, and I'm not trying to defend the people that say don't do anything or continue it,
yeah,
but when you say we're going to fix this right now, we're just going to do this, and it's a rhetorical solution.
Sure.
The solution is a series of things that require political support to get done.
Jason Lewis
becomes president,
right,
and says, I'm going to fix this right now. And he runs flat into Congress where some people don't agree with him. And he has to figure out how to piece it out.
How did Reagan get a tax cut for the rich passed in a Democratic Congress in 1981? You speak over Congress and you convince the American people, right, and the politicians have to do it or they lose their jobs.
But he also compromised on some other issues, too.
He worked with
Tip O'Neill. And I'm not going to say that was a simpler time, but there was also this issue of the Cold War going on.
The reason Trump is resonating, despite what you're saying, despite what Megyn Kelly is saying, despite what anybody's saying, is because he's tapping into something.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I think he is tapping into something. Here's what I think he's tapping into. I think he's tapping into frustration and discontent. But you know as well as I do, those people aren't going to do anything. They're just angry. And what frustrates me is I hear all the time how angry these people are and how they're just not going to tolerate this anymore and blah, 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 blah. And then they stay home on election day.
The Tea Party phenomenon known as meet, greet, and retreat.
They don't do anything.
Even worse,
and we're going to kind of transfer out of the immigration thing because I don't want to do two podcasts about immigration. Or what happens is they end up being diffused in their efforts because they're working for all these other organizations which really aren't tied to the political system. So they're working through
In a nutshell, everybody's got their favorite subsidy. So the Chamber of Commerce loves free, cheap labor from immigration, so they're going to fight it. The average Democrat loves the public assistance. It doesn't matter whether it's free college education or Obamacare or welfare, temporary aid and needy families. They love that, so they want it. The Republicans love farm programs. Police pensions are okay. Every other government employee pensions are bad. Police pensions are great.
I've said that.
And they love the military-industrial complex. I mean, if you listen to Huckabee and Walker and Graham, all of these guys, all of them, first thing I'm going to do is undo the deal with Iran. Okay, name me one country that's actually defeating ISIS and Al-Qaeda of Iraq. Oh, yeah, that would be Iran and Syria. What we want to do is defang them so ISIS is even stronger. These people have this pound-the-drum mentality to appeal to the base of the party who's got their subsidy. And their subsidy is, and a whole lot of military contractors love what's happening, perpetual war.
But wait a second. Where this rhetoric is at is it's directed to all these people who are angry, who won't do anything because they won't work in politics because they've been frustrated with politics.
It's directed to the Fox News, Wall Street Journal, and talk radio crowd.
Well,
but that's 5%.
Meet, greet, and retreat.
They're trying to win an endorsement
from
in a
5%.
Very small. Right. Exactly. Which is why this notion of, by God, we're going to undo this Iranian deal and start bombing Tehran sounds great in a Fox News debate. And Lord knows Fox News pitches this every other day. And then, you know, you watch Krauthammer and Bolton. Boy, there's a great debate. How many bombs? The only debate there is how many bombs we should drop. And so they're doing this, and all of a sudden they get to the general election, and you get a populace that says, well, you know, maybe this whole Iraq war didn't go very well. And we've been doing this for 14 years, and we're still not that much. Maybe we shouldn't have another war, guys, and they lose the election.
There you go. And they lose the election because the people that supposedly support them aren't willing to do the work to get involved in the process to be a counterweight to you know, we want to do this and we want to do that and everything else, which brings us to Minnesota, because I hear this all the time too. What's wrong with Minnesota? Why can't Minnesota have the kinds of reforms? And I'm talking about conservatives saying this, supposedly.
What do you mean? Lowest unemployment rate in the Midwest. What's not to like? You've got people digging ditches and other people filling them up. What's
give them spoons?
Yeah, right. But no, that way employs more people.
But you know, but I mean, I hear this all the time. What's wrong with Minnesota? Why can't? And then this is from the people that go to the meeting over here for the, let's say, the Tea Party, but then they don't go and get involved in their local BPOUs. They don't get involved in the local political process. Very few of them, anyway, because they're too busy going over here to the meet, greet, and retreat meeting. So they're always saying, "Well, what's wrong with Minnesota?
Or
why can't we?"
Minnesota just could be the Massachusetts of the Midwest. Like, it's not going to change. There's a bunch of Norwegians and Swedes that like socialism.
What's wrong with, which I actually think is the problem, what's wrong with the Republican Party in the state of Minnesota?
Well, they won the House. They won the House. You know, really, if you take a look at it, I can't remember what the Cooks got this political analysis, you know, political analysis R plus 2, D plus 2, meaning that if a district is D plus 2, it votes 2% more Democratic than the nation as a whole.
Right.
And the last time I looked, Minnesota wasn't that far beyond the realm. It may be D plus 4 or 5, but it wasn't like D plus 20.
Depending on the district.
Yeah, well, no, I mean
it's
the state,
like,
as a whole.
Texas.
The state,
not,
as a whole.
It's not like Texas,
no,
where you
right.
have districts that are R plus 25, let's say.
But I will say this. The standard country club, Norm Coleman, Freedom Club Republican will never do well in Minnesota. Never. You've got to be an outside-the-box Republican, which goes back to Jesse Ventura. The guy ran as this screaming libertarian, governed as a liberal, of course, but ran as a screaming libertarian telling some college kid on the steps of the Capitol, fund your own higher education. And everybody applauded. He was doing things outside the box. Now, he wasn't a Republican, which certainly helps up in the Iron Range, because, you know, the last person they'll vote for is a Republican. And it doesn't matter whether they agree with him or not.
Yeah, if you're a Democrat, as long as you're for not taking their guns away, you're okay.
Yellow dog Democrat, right. The Democrat was a yellow dog, they'll vote for him. But if you had a Republican that was really speaking to the disaffected, the younger people, and as you well know, I've become this born-again pacifist, but the anti-war crowd, you let Al Franken defend the war. Let Amy Klobuchar defend the war that their president continues in Libya and Syria. Let them defend the military contractors and all of this. Let them do that. Why shouldn't we be the party of Republicanism when it comes to Robert Taft or Eisenhower or Reagan, who got us out of Lebanon and wouldn't go into Central America when the hawks were pounding the drum? Let the Republican be the party of bring America home, and if we're going to have troops on somebody's border, by God, it's going to be ours. Now, all of a sudden, Al Franken's going, well, I'm not really a warmonger. I mean, you flip the tables. There's not one Republican in the state willing to do that. And then if you're just going to run another Norm Coleman, you know, hold on, let me call the chamber. What do you want me to do again? Gotcha.
You know what I call them? The chambers of Italian fascism, because they just want to make the trains run on time. They want trains.
Right.
And
that's
a big issue. Are you disillusioned with politics?
Well, I have had this metamorphosis that primarily over foreign policy in the last 10 years. That has really scared me. There's a great book out there that everybody ought to read by Thomas Fleming, other than my audio book, which, by the way, you have failed to promote.
Well, you can promote.
No, that would be immodest.
It would be self-serving.
It's Power Divided is Power Check on audio at Amazon and iTunes. Amazon,
yeah.
And I added bonus commentary. So it's a 4-hour Jason Lewis show all over again. So get it now.
I can put a link up if you want.
That a boy. Right. So anyway, there's a great book, Thomas Fleming, called The Illusion of Victory. And it's all about the propaganda that got us into World War I, which is the mother of all wars, because it set us down this Wilsonian international adventurism,
right.
Set up the League of Nations, all that stuff you know about. And obviously set up the stage for World War II, because the London Naval Accord, the Treaty of Versailles, all of these things, reparations we were demanding from Germany, we basically hamstrung them so much that it gave rise to a despot. So the propaganda, the Committee on Public Information, kill the Hun, We were going after Irish Americans and German Americans who opposed the war, and literally censoring them with the Sedition Act. I mean, that's how the Espionage Act, by the way, was passed in 1970. Well, that said, if Bob Davis comes across a piece of public information that the Defense Department is ruining money, or taking money and blowing it, if you print it, you could be in violation of the Espionage Act.
Well, many people don't. People really don't understand that. That era gave rise to a whole bunch of progressive, governmental intervention ideas. Some, I suppose, you could say they were in the end good, but most of them weren't. And one of them was also prohibition. So it wasn't just World War One; it was also prohibition, which gave rise.
It was Teddy Roosevelt that said a man should be able to keep his income only so much as it serves the community. His distant cousin, of course, Franklin Roosevelt, then took that to heart. You had the two Roosevelts plus Woodrow Wilson, as you say, were all in the same progressive camp. My point, as I go back to this metamorphosis of the last 10 years, is war is right there in with liberalism. You can't have big government abroad and have small government at home. The income tax came about when? War of 1812, Civil War, World War One, World War Two. The income tax withholding? Milton Friedman's idea, ironically, in World War II. All of big government comes with this national security state, this constant fear, this constant... we're $18 trillion in debt, and they're talking about going to war with Iran, which would make Iraq look like a picnic? Are these people nuts?
Well, Jason is hardly done, but we're going to have to stop here and break this podcast into two. So 403 will be a tandem with 404, and that will be coming up very soon. I'll be posting that podcast as well. And thanks again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring podcast 403. Don't forget, winter is coming, people. And just like they say on the Game of Thrones, you may not be ready for it. What they don't tell you is this is a great time to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating check your heating systems, because if you integrate smart tech with your heating system, it makes it more efficient and you save money, and you wouldn't believe what they can do. Give them a call in St. Paul. Here's the number. You ready? 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too. And don't forget, Ryan is great for emergency service, and thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Also want to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcasts.com, Alpha Systems. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks again for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 403. Come back for Podcast 404, another half hour with Jason Lewis.
Well, Linda was mine till the time that I found her, holding Jim, loving Jim. When Sue came along, love me strong, that's what I thought. Me and Sue, that I do.